Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
What was that all about?
I had some ideas late last night. I needed to consult with the computer about some quantum electrodynamic calculations. The holodeck Einstein program seemed like the best way. I guess I went a little overboard.
A little? Most of the stuff on that blackboard was way out of my league, and yours too.
Not really. I just haven't thought along those lines before. It's all really pretty evident now, and if you were to put your mind to it, I'm
Reg.
Sure...
Ever since our run-in with that probe, something's different about you.
What? Because I'm beginning to behave like the rest of the crew? With confidence in what I'm doing?
You just spent the entire night arguing grand unification theories with Albert Einstein.
Yes, but...
Reg, something's happened to you. And we can't ignore that.
Yes, I've finally become the person I've always wanted to be. Do we have to ask why?
Yeah, I think we do.
So what were we talking about? Okay, we weren't...
Ricky Lake.
No. What I was saying was we're supposed to stop talking
Star
about
Trek.
Ricky Lake.
Star Trek.
We're shift gears over to Star Trek.
Star Trek. Okay. Star Trek.
Star Trek. Right. The Next Generation.
Yes. Okay. So, all right. Let's get organized here a little bit for it. Let's orient the listener. That's you.
It's got Star Trek.
Yes. Okay. You are listening to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I'm doing the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
It's episode 114 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. We welcome you, and we will be discussing...
And it's episode 419 of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Really? No, it's not.
I don't believe that for a second.
It's the fourth season. It's the 19th episode of the fourth season.
Oh, it sounds it's different.
Right. I don't know the production code. The nth degree. So we'll get into that in a second. First,
the scanth degree.
I just want to mention it's been a long time since we've talked TNG.
TNG to me?
Yes. But not too long ago, I was happy to join the Green Shirt podcast, episode 107 of that podcast, to talk about Unification 2. So if you want to hear some of me talking about TNG, you can go check them out. That all they cover is TNG, and I'm sure they've covered the nth degree.
It's hardcore.
So you can check that out. The other thing going on sometime soon is this, what is it, hashtag Captain Picard Week.
Oh.
By there's a whole podcast festival sponsored by or put together by the Strange New Pod, where a bunch of people are participating.
A podcast festival.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for that.
Picardcast Postable.
Postable. Picardcast Postable. That's good.
Pass the ball.
Pasta. Oh my gosh.
What? Pasta ball.
Pasta ball.
Pasta
ball. It's like a rice ball, but it's pasta ball.
Like a rice bowl or a pasta bowl?
No, ball.
That's impossible.
Like that's impossible. It's impossible.
Are you talking about a ball? Like a ball you kick? Like a ball?
Yeah, like a rice ball.
Mama gets it out with ALL.
What? Oh, you're talking about that detergent. Mama gets it out with ALL.
This has been a pop culture feast.
Okay. Anyway, we're going to start the podcast now, but I just want to call out that
give a shout out to
Green Shirt Podcast and the Strange New Pods Captain Picard Festival. Our schedules are a bit tight, so we can't participate in it as much as we'd like. But we will be listening and enjoying all the because Captain Picard fucking rules.
Yeah,
Captain Picard.
He does, man.
You know, all is not a great name for a product because there's you want.
Do they even make it anymore?
I don't think so.
They don't make all.
But
anymore.
You want like two syllables, like ending in a Y, like a pet's name, like Downy or
no.
Something.
What I want,
most.
I want a detergent that's
most.
Pretty good. And Mama gets it out with M O S T.
All is just like
Mama
there's
gets
not
E H H.
There's not enough hard consonant sounds. You know, all need it should be alp. Or like Alpi.
Alpo?
Alpi. Alfie. No. Alfie. No fate.
All right. What are you talking about?
Alfie.
That's from Crass, I believe.
Crass. Okay.
He sold out.
All I'm presuming this is some form of music.
That was the band Crass.
It was a band.
When you guys talking in runes at each other, and I just I have no choice but to presume it's some form of musical.
That was kind of rune-y.
Musical business.
The name is Crass, not Clash. You can stuff your punk credentials. It's them that take the cash.
That's right. Yeah. That's from their song.
Star Trek: The Next Generation. The Nth Degree.
We're getting there.
Barclay. Barclay, this is a Barclay episode.
I know, right?
This is a Barclay episode.
What's the deal with Barclay? Like
Reginald Barclay?
Like, he's on the Enterprise. Like, there's a reason why he's on the Enterprise.
Much debated topic.
But it's clear that he's not, you know, Riker or Worf or either of the Crushers or...
You know. I forget. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Yar.
Well, what was the deal with that one guy?
He's not even fucking Mott. That old blue shitbag.
I gotta agree. Something's up with Mott.
What about that DS9 dude who was like he had that little story arc. He was like the engineer, and we saw him occasionally. He was an engineer that we saw occasionally. He started appearing.
Chief O'Brien?
No. He was
the other person.
The one where I was like, I remember seeing him. I was like, who is that guy? He just appeared one day for a few episodes.
Oh, I think that was when Colm Meaney was filming a movie of some sort.
Okay.
So they had that other guy. But they set it up because they knew it was in the schedule that Colm Meaney.
Yeah, and I guess, there's Dr. Pulaski, but there was like a good reason to have Dr. Pulaski because of just. What's practical? But yeah, why did they have Barclay?
They got Dr. Pulaski because they wanted to. The producers didn't like Beverly Crusher.
Maybe she
didn't like working with Rick Berman.
The point being is that we know the purpose behind Dr. Pulaski being there.
McCoy clone. McCoy clone.
Oh yeah, she's kind of McCoy clone. She hates Data like McCoy hated Spock,
but loves.
Yeah,
intrigued by.
Yeah, but But there was a practical reason for them doing that. What was the reason? Like, that was a non-story reason. But, like, what was the reason? Yeah, like, why Barclay was in TNG. There was no, like, meta-story reason. There was no story reason. They threw him in every once in a while. But he's really good. Dwight Schultz is, like...
Dwight Schultz is good.
Yeah.
He's really, and it's a credit to him because
he's a bit of a nut. But
I'm not a fan of the person of Dwight Schultz.
Oh, really? I don't know much about him.
People can look it up. He seems like an obnoxious fella. He seems like the kind of guy you don't want to hang out with. But he's a fantastic actor.
Yeah.
And as much as he's awesome on the A-Team and all that...
That's right.
I'm biased, but it's his work as Reginald Barclay is, I think, his top work.
Reg
Barclay, because he does some stints on Voyager as well as Barclay.
Oh yeah, there's that weird. I've seen some of those where he's like back on Earth, involved in some sort of project that's talking to Voyager, finding Voyager. He's a Voyager buff.
He was really convincing as a bad actor in that play. Like, it was really convincing. It didn't even sound...
He seemed like a person with severe social anxiety trying to act in front of a bunch of people.
That was so weird when Crusher was, like, given the line. She's like, I love you. I must go now. Oh, and tell him to write me. And then she, like looks at Barclay, and he's like, looks like he's almost going to go in and kiss her.
Yeah.
And like during the play, it's like, was he like misreading the situation? But like, or is that's how socially awkward he is that he's misreading a situation where he's in the play as an opportunity to like,
I think like, it was just more, he didn't know exactly because they showed him forgetting his line and he was fidgety and
nervous. I like
he was just,
but yeah, and they did, but it just, that one was really awkward somehow. It was weird. I don't know.
I like Data's reaction to, and he was like, well, why is everybody being so nice? It's like, it's just polite. And like he makes this funny face. Like,
yeah,
like,
dude,
I'll pretend to be polite too.
Barclay's acting was so bad that it gave Data emotions.
It made Data like question.
Well, and the bad acting, the bad, because I agree 100%.
I didn't know what he was saying about the method, why he was talking. I know
he wasn't
the method, but like, who cares? The method approach is debated, right?
Data's all hung up on the method.
Well, maybe by the 24th century, they're like, nope. Method it is.
Yeah, that's probably
none of this freewheeling bullshit.
Maybe they were all about the method, I guess, in the late 80s, early 90s. I don't know.
Yeah, or it was in popular culture. Now.
It was hip.
Like ESP.
It was hip to talk about.
But the thing is, with this bad acting, it's so nicely bookended later in the episode with the good acting, right?
Yeah.
And part of what blew me away was, it's like, okay, Barclay, Dwight Schultz playing Barclay, standard old Barclay. It's already a complex character. You know, even in the previous examples that we've seen him in, he's got to play both the fumbling, nervous, anxious person that he is. But then, for example, in the holodeck episode, right, where he does all the horrible things with stealing the images of fellow crewmates and making them in the holodeck.
Is that the is that the first holodeck or first Barclay episode?
I believe that's the first Barclay.
So. I think it's that
Hollow Pursuits.
Hollow Pursuits. Is that the one where it begins with like he's late to a meeting and Riker's like "fuck you, Barclay," and like everyone's just like "fuck you, Barclay," and then and Barclay's coming off as this real asshole, but he's just like, you know, has problems.
But in that one, he also has to kind of, when he's in fantasy mode, he is more confident. His personas that he plays, he's more confident, but those are still private. And to me, when he later in this episode, after he gets zapped, and we'll talk about that, when he does the confident acting, I think part of what makes it hit stronger is they had him do the bad acting first and do it well. Play his regular self and then do this good acting.
And he had like the nose and everything.
Yeah, but when he did that soliloquy, although I will say I think it was a little ridiculous that Beverly Crusher was all like, "Yeah, oh my gosh,
She looked like she was
blown away.
She looked like she actually rubbed her face in some onions because her face. I think they literally must have done something like that because her face was so red and weird. Yeah, I mean,
shove a bunch of onions in it.
Yeah, but yeah, she was
like red onions.
She was. I love red onions. Yellow onions. Crusher likes the arts. She likes dancing and she likes theater. And she likes to, you know, so Barclay really hit her, but she wasn't jealous. She thought it was awesome when she found out he hit on Troy. Like she was like,
yeah, they were both like, that's very un-Barclay.
Well, it's the 24th century. Gene Roddenberry's vision is that women would simply be like,
everybody's okay.
Ooh, everyone fucks left and right.
Yeah,
it's like the 60s.
I mean, it's like when I kind of dig it, but I will, you know, I'll lay down the marker that there's some potential problems with that.
When Barclay like made a pass at her, we never found out, and it was bookended by the like
we're talking about to Troy.
Yeah, to Troy. Sorry, yeah. when bookended by Riker, sort of like asking her at the end, but we never find out if she really. Would have gone. She seemed like she would have gone out with him, but she was too.
She
maybe
was close.
She was close, but once she was the counselor thing, but that might have been bullshit because she was also just so
that
weird.
Sounded like bullshit.
Yeah,
there's already so much inappropriate stuff on TNG. Like it doesn't, you know.
I think she was just like so weirded out that Barclay was so different or something. She was probably scared because when Barclay made Crusher cry and when Barclay did something else, she all looked all concerned. She was the only one that was like.
So I know we've jumped ahead here, but I do think it's worth discussing this because there's an inconsistency here. So she says early on when he asks her out, she says, "No, it's not cool because I was your counselor." Now, again, that could have just been an excuse. And there's evidence that otherwise, maybe that was just an excuse because later in the episode, she, of course, agrees to go on a date with him.
Yeah, right.
Anything goes on the date,
so
man.
Him being her patient.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an issue then. So we must presume that she was maybe using that as an excuse before. But anyway, I'm not even trying to psychoanalyze all this stuff. It's just there's that inconsistency there.
Right.
And I'm not sure what the message is of her having her do it. I kind of think the writers just fell in love with, we need a nice, cute little ending.
Yeah.
Let's pick up that thread.
I think so. I couldn't help but wonder after her and Barclay went on the date, I was like, did something go down? I don't think so. Cause it seems like the reason I would guess that she would go out with Barclay at the end is cause she knew what his intentions were when he was smooth Barclay. Yeah. He was trying to, you know,
they remain friends though. Cause she's in the Voyager episodes that he's in.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I think when Barclay was going after before, it was obvious he had one thing on his mind.
Barclay's only want one thing.
But like when Barclay was normal Barclay, she felt like less threatened by him cause she knew he wouldn't.
What's the message there?
Yeah, I don't know, because she was like really, I still couldn't help but wonder. It's like they probably just went home, and she's like, "Good night, Barclay." He's like, "Good night, Kelsler." They probably didn't do anything, but wonders if you know, in the future, is that totally cool to just be like, "Yeah, we're gonna, no big deal."
But then you could argue, is she being like over? I don't know. It's such a silly little thing, but it somehow aggravated me.
I mean, beta zeds are open, right? I mean, I know that nudity and sex are not the same thing, obviously, but they're super open. There was a weird thing with like Worf and Troy and Alexander were sitting in some mud bath in that one episode.
Troy's mom was there.
Oh yeah. I think that was the same episode. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I don't know.
It's like when
seems
you
like
do,
beta zeds would be open.
When you do like the instant genius stuff, like you always get like the super smooth with chicks thing along with it.
Like, oh, you're just like, talking about. I was like, hey, what's is this? Can I do this? Was this instant genius?
You know, the instant genius trope. You know, like
this is some sort this of pill?
Movie. This is a lot like that movie Lawnmower Man. You know,
oh yeah.
Or do you
yeah.
remember Stefan Urkel from Family Matters?
Or Kenan and Kel?
Right.
Steve Urkel, like when he right. had a machine that turned him into Stefan Urkel, totally. And he was totally smooth.
Hey, there's a couple. There's some Star Trek. There's some Star Trek precedence for this because this plot is similar in some ways to two episodes. Two.
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 Well, it's similar to I'm Not Jokingly.
Yes. Yes. Where no man has gone before, where Gary Mitchell. Elizabeth Danner, they get zapped by the galactic barrier powers and become super powerful. It's a little different, but the same concept, which is the how do they react to being all powerful? Mm-hmm. There's the episode, was it Q-Who with, is it Q-Who? I was getting the Q episodes confused, but where Q-Who? Riker, where Q turns Riker into a Q.
Oh, I believe that is
oh,
Q.
Oh, yeah.
And,
wait, didn't, but wasn't.
That's one of the early
Riker, Q. Oh, yeah, that's
Riker,
what, yeah, right.
Riker, unlike Gary Mitchell, Riker eventually was like, man, fuck that noise. He enjoyed it for a bit, but he's like, I'm a Starfleet officer. I'm from Alaska.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that bullshit. Just have God powers bullshit.
We don't do that in Alaska.
I just want to play some Parisi's Squares, goddammit.
So, Barclay. Parisi Squares. Yeah, is that the dangerous one where people die?
I think it's the dangerous one.
So, Barclay.
As opposed to, what was it called? Like, Ambu Jitsu?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was also dangerous.
Right.
Not as dangerous as Parisi Squares.
Involved some American Gladiator style pugil.
It was dangerous.
You weren't allowed to see for some reason.
Yeah, right. So, Barclay became the ship's computer. Now, on the lines of, like, what it was similar to, I'm wondering who would win in a smart fight between Barclay, Smart Barclay, Gary Mitchell.
Smart Barclay.
Smart Barclay, the talented Gary Mitchell,
the talented Gary Mitchell,
or the Discovery ship's computer,
Zora.
Yeah, Zora. Yeah, which was who wins in a smart fight?
Yeah. Did you have a Commander Data in there?
Data? No, Data doesn't. He wouldn't be able to compete. I don't think.
Okay.
But I didn't add Data.
Okay.
I don't think. I think Data would be close.
Yeah. Well.
I think Smart Barclay was smarter than Data.
I think Smart is measured along a number of dimensions.
Well, of course.
And it depends on the context that we place these characters into.
All right. Of course. Okay. I know there's not.
I know you know that.
Okay. But I'm just telling the audience in case you know. Sometimes when I say things, I'm not talking directly to you.
I was telling the audience. In support of your argument,
you're not supposed to speak directly to the
again.
Audience.
Part wall. Of my role on this podcast is to head off those emails and tweets.
Emails and tweets.
The emails and tweets are all like, well, actually, you know.
Actually, you're stupid. Did you know that? You know, the smarter person would know that you're stupid. You know,
the internet doesn't like you.
Yeah.
We don't like you. Just stop. Just stop.
Why don't you kill yourself? We don't get much of that because we're three white men.
Oh, man.
And while people will vehemently disagree with us, we.
Dan, are you white?
We intriguingly don't get threats of rape. And murder.
Yeah, I can only. God, that's fucking terrible.
Yes, it is.
That's such a bummer.
Yeah. All right. So, anyway, back at the ranch.
So, as far as the question of Data versus Barclay, remember that. When
Joe Piscopo.
When we got the first view, I wrote down the Barclay smart moments. I have like 12 moments listed.
Barclay Bart moments.
Sparkly Bart. I'm not gonna get by this with all this wordplay. It's gonna fuck me up. So when
does it count as wordplay if it's not so fun?
Is it just sort of
so
word tedium.
Bit of a chore.
So,
word chores.
So I talked about Troy being worried. That was in the fourth Smart Barclay moment when Barclay makes Crusher swoon with his acting.
Smart Barclay.
And then the third...
This is some classic Dan counting shit, which I'm loving.
Third Smart Barclay was this part, which proves that Barclay is more talented than Data in this scenario because... they were talking about the Argus array that was broken down, and Geordi said it's like we got to go bat them in series, basically fix the
computer cores.
Yeah, the reactors. It was fix the reactors, and one by one. And then Barclay, that was his. Now this is his first time of being smug. Third Smart Barclay when he finally understands what's going on, and he's like, that's the first time he's starting to get a little full of himself. Because before he's like, what the fuck's going on? And now he's becoming smooth. But he said, no, let's do them all at once. Data said, that's interesting that you want to reprogram that shit, but it'll take at least 7 weeks to fucking do that. And Barkley said, I'll do it in two. Right. So right there, that's the evidence that we get that Barkley like is outshining Data at this point, you know? So that was third smart Barkley moment.
Smart Barkley!
I've got a bunch more, but...
Hold on real quick, because it will aggravate listeners that I mentioned two episodes that this shares some similarities to.
Sorry. And
it's quite all right, because there was no natural segue. No natural segue.
Segways aren't natural. Do people even still ride those for the city anymore?
I think the company went under.
Underground?
People still ride them.
Now there's like punk rocker segues.
Yeah, it's like a sort of a steampunk style segue.
Whoa.
gangs of segue people riding through
just get a bunch of steam in your face.
It's a steam-powered segue.
Yeah, they're still electric, but they're charged with a steam engine.
With like a dirigible attached to it.
A didgeridoo?
And some hilarious copper goggles.
Copper goggles.
A big old clock.
All right.
Copper goggles.
I don't want to upset the audience too much. We're in one of those. This is one of those. Let's aggravate the audience on purpose because it tickles us.
I think you are you sure you're not deflecting to the audience? Is it really you that's getting aggravated?
Maybe it's you that's getting aggravated.
Is it deflecting or projecting? I don't know.
In that case, I think it would be projecting, but I don't think that's what's happening here.
Okay. Go on.
Total podcaster honesty.
Okay.
As is the creed. The other episode that this sort of lays the seeds for The Inner Light coming up down the road in the fifth season. This is a fourth season episode because what do you have here? What you have here?
It's
a funny little probe.
You have a probe shows up. It zaps somebody.
Space applicator.
And that it has some.
Yes, it does.
It has some purpose that at first seems potentially, malignant, but now it's in fact benign. It's a benign purpose.
It's some big head people.
It's like some other alien race trying to communicate with the Enterprise through really inconvenient, like, pain
it's
in the ass.
It's the guy from that Seinfeld episode of the Latvian Orthodox.
What?
Remember when?
Are you talking about the Cyrithian at the end?
Yeah, he was also on Deep Space Nine.
He was on Deep Space
Nine. Oh,
he was
really,
on the Storyteller.
I really want to know. I've seen him before.
He played a Bajoran.
Because he's been on a bunch of television.
Because I wonder. I wonder what the internet thinks of that guy. Because I really like his faces he makes. He's really awesome.
K Cutter.
Yeah, K Cutter.
K E Cutter.
It's hard to figure out what this episode is about. Anyway, keep going with your.
It ain't about much.
Green Acres.
And all I was going to say. Oh, that's cool.
Petticoat Junction.
Of course.
Green Acres is a great show. I was just mentioning the Inner Light connection there, that you see components. It's not the Inner Light. It's a different deal, but you see the components there that are later put together in a different way. The other thing that's a fun little trivia about it's not trivia because people fucking know it. It doesn't count as trivia if people know it. Right. But, the Argus array,
it's a fact
that shows up later in Parallels. Which is
sounded
that
familiar? Yeah,
yeah, because that's the one with Worf, and he's in a bunch of different dimensions and stuff. So the Argus
that's
array
a good one. Yeah.
So
and the Argus array also has shown up on some like maps and stuff during TNG and even Picard. I think they have a map where their Argus array is listed.
That's some canon array right there
on TNG. I don't know how they go into it, if they go into it anymore, what it's about later, but it's introduced as a subspace telescope, which I don't know what the fuck that means. But what we find out is it's just an extension of the mechanism that allows the Enterprise to travel to the center of the galaxy, right? It's not a telescope. Is it a means of travel?
Okay. We'll have to pause there for a moment because
you lost.
I never thought that. I mean, I just thought it just happened to be.
I thought it was a telescope.
That they were I don't know that they used the Argus array in order to open subspace, but now that you mention it retroactively in my brains, it seems like it could be the case.
So,
but I don't remember any language that's like, we're using the Argus array to do it.
So, okay. So at near the end, after when Barkley calls them the Cytherians and the aliens, like, oh, Cytherians. Not necessarily. It should have been Phlox. That would have been awesome.
Everything should have been Phlox.
They should redo that like they do with the Star Wars and Anakin with the hollow.
Didgeridoo that?
Just replace it with Phlox's face going, ooh. Anyway. But then Barkley said, the probe was designed. I'm spitting all over my computer. What is going on?
It's not COVID safe.
No, it's not. Barkley said, he said, the probe was designed to instruct outsiders on how to reach the system. That's what it was made for. but the technologies aren't always compatible. And then he says, they failed with the Argus computer and with the computer on board the shuttle, but they're able to reprogram me. So the Argus computer is part of the Argus array, which means it was made by the Cytherians because they made it in order, because they wanted to, it was designed to instruct outsiders how to reach the system.
You everything you said up to a certain point was 100% correct.
They made the probey thing.
And then you made a jump. The probe tried to hijack the Argus array, didn't work. Tried to hijack the shuttle, it didn't work.
Yeah,
and then it was successful hijacking Barclay's brain for one reason.
Okay, okay, fine. Fine. I don't care.
Quickly resolved.
I'm right. My name's Dan. I'm wrong at everything. I'm stupid. My name's Dan. Don't listen to me. I'm stupid. I'm stupid. Don't listen to me. Stop. Stop listening to me. Whoa. Stop listening to me. I'm stupid.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
It had a wheel on the back of it. Did you notice that?
No.
With the Argus array?
The probe.
Oh, the probe.
The probe looked like a big pill, right?
It was like a pill. Yeah, it looked like a pill.
I can't remember. It was repurposed. They're always repurposing stuff. I can't place what they were repurposed this from previous. Whatever.
So, yeah. Okay. So the subspace telescope is an extension of the mechanism that allows the... No, we don't know what it is.
I don't know.
But it stopped relaying the data, though, which would indicate that...
No more data for you.
So the probe fucked with the Argus array. That broke the Argus array.
And it broke the shuttle.
And then they got there. So they weren't trying to lure them there, but they just got there. And then the probe saw it as an opportunity to be like, hey, maybe... So, I don't know. It was doing...
Well, it wasn't trying to lure them there. They got there because the shit weren't working.
Yeah, right. And so... But the probe saw them, and it was like probably just like... So the probe had was improvising.
It was another target. Yeah.
It was improvising. Yeah.
It was just going to keep trying. And probe didn't even try to do anything to the Enterprise.
It's
until
like
after the Barclay stuff, then it was chasing him.
Or virus.
So
the impulse engines made the Enterprise go backwards. How do impulse engines even work? I've always wondered that.
I don't know. Maybe it modifies the specific impulse in the gravitational field.
They
and
eject
that,
like they eject locality. Part of the crew.
They just use the mass of the crew. Okay. It squirts water.
They have a bunch of those
right. Just squirts
it's
water.
Just
those octagonal
gas.
Boxes they keep in the.
The
wharf crushing boxes.
Yeah.
And the wharf crushers. and the bulkheads.
Yeah.
The bulkheads.
Bulkheads.
That always makes me think of like beefy dudes.
Bulkheads.
Steakheads.
You know, because you're talking about like, you know, was it jockheads? There's a phrase that has something with heads.
Meatheads?
Meatheads.
Smeat is a form of spam. So I was talking about how... talking about Troy hitting on Barclay and Barclay making a pass at Troy.
Hitting Barclay on the head.
He didn't, yeah. So, I was wrong on two accounts. I said Troy hit on Barclay, but Barclay didn't hit on Troy. He made a pass at Troy. Is there a difference? Yes or no, Jesse?
Could you clarify the question?
Wait, what?
Is there a difference between making a pass at someone and hitting on someone?
Doesn't that mean the same thing?
That's what I would
That's
think.
That's just an old-fashioned
I just thought of that.
I think they're part and parcel of the same category. Perhaps you could argue some nuanced differences between the two, nuances that are so nuanced as to have very little relevance to the actual impact of the act.
You're saying that shit don't matter.
Yes,
stop trifling, Dan. It doesn't matter. So at the when they were leaving that room, Riker says to Troy, he says, he goes, you said he made a pass at you, but you failed to mention whether he was successful or not. And then Troy is all like, you know, being coy, like, and then he like,
she's like, fuck off, Imzadi.
It's also
Imzadi.
He's looking
around. I guess technically you can't be an ex Imzadi. Don't send the emails. I know.
Don't they get back together eventually?
Yeah, but they
got kids and shit.
And they make pizza and stuff.
Yeah, they make
pizza. Well, that one guy's making, he's probably burning it.
Yeah. But after she says that, I like how he looks around at everyone. He looks at Crusher. She's like, I don't know. And then he looks back. And if you look closely, it's easy to miss, but he looks back at Picard, and Picard like doesn't want any part of the conversation.
Yeah, no,
he's just totally ignoring it. But
Picard almost doesn't want anything to do with this whole episode.
Oh, dude.
There's that part where he's like, you know, he doesn't know what to do, and he's like, well, I'm open for suggestions.
And he's embarrassed because he's like, because I think Picard at that moment, because we should talk about just in general,
well,
it's a common topic. Why the fuck do they let people just randomly do shit on the Enterprise? And this is an example where the look on Picard's face at that moment seemed to be like, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't have, like, okay, I had a crew member. He got zapped so hard he got in the hospital by the same thing that zapped a couple of other big pieces of equipment. And a couple minutes later, he's disobeying orders.
And I said it was okay at first.
Maybe we... And by the way, we are currently doing his plan. Mm-hmm.
Well, Riker was...
Shit went bad when they were doing his plan, Barclay's plan.
In that meeting, Riker was the one who was saying, like, we got to stop this now. Yes. Something's going on. And, like, and like he was right.
Everybody's like, hey, let's just...
Picard's like, nothing's going on right now. It's like, you think Picard would have some foresight, be like, oh, he's not doing anything wrong right now. But he has, like... dramatically changed.
He's fucking Barclay.
Yeah. And there's two ways to interpret that, and I think they're two equally viable ways to interpret it. One is that the reason why they're giving Barclay the benefit of the doubt is because they're good people, they're good Star Trek people, they've known Barclay for a long time, and even though he's acting a little bit weird, they believe that Barclay has a good heart and he wants to do right. The other way to interpret it is that they're kind of listening to Barclay now because he's not such a tweaky person, which is kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, it's the same dude, but now that he's sort of chill...
Yeah,
we're gonna be
right. Listen to me, guys.
We'll hand over fucking full control of the ship to him. Not that they did that on purpose.
Well, he sounds so confident and knowledgeable.
He usurped the computer really at first from Geordi.
Yeah, that was like, I don't understand how you don't get in trouble for that.
Yeah, well, you saw
just because you saved the day.
That's some Starfleet inquiry shit right there.
Like when Mariner
court-martial
on Lower Decks, when Mariner saves the day, she still goes to the brig afterwards for right. That's more realistic. Lower Decks is more realistic.
There's a hearing.
So,
a hearing.
So when Geordi Barclay. So the second smart.
Let's call the whole thing off.
The second smart Barclay moment was when Geordi eyes Barclay and predicts Geordi wants him to shunt all plasma to the emitters, and he's like, "Oh, I already did that, buddy." You know, and then Barclay usurps control. He pumps up shields 300% so they can blast the probe,
just like Reebok's pumps.
And I like when Picard's like, "Thank you, Mr. Barclay." Awesome line. Yeah. But this was like a callback to the beginning of the episode, because when they're checking out the probe initially, Barclay says thanks for assigning. Like initially, Barclay's going to Geordi. He's like, "Thanks for assigning me this mention." Before he's like, "Don't mention it. You're one of my top engineers." Geordi, LeVar Burton is really good in this episode, by the way, too. Mm-hmm. I thought he was really good.
My good time boy.
Bewildered.
Yeah.
Like, he's always just like, what the fuck is going on?
So Barclay says, "Thank you for assigning me the mission." LaForge is like, "Don't mention it." And then, Picard's like, "Thank you, Mr. Barclay." And then Barclay looks at Geordi after Geordi is looking at Barclay like he's scared for his job at this point. Like, no one likes getting showed up by their support, especially Barclay that. But he's also freaked. He's also worried about Barclay, too. But and then Barclay says, "I'm sorry I overstepped my authority," and which LaForge says again, "Don't mention it." So the first time he says
he doesn't know what to say.
So the first time he says "don't mention it," it was after Barclay thanked Geordi for lifting him up. The second one was a "don't mention it" was after Barclay apologized for going too far. So one was lifting him up. One was sort of like, it was like an equalizing.
That was like literally let's not ever talk about this again.
I had not observed that. That is well observed.
It was acted as an equalizing force to bring them both up and down in those situations. So anyway.
Which is a perfect segue because.
Through the wormhole?
Mr. Geordi says that and then they go to commercial.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do is we're going to go to a quick break.
Oh, shit.
A quick break.
Ah!
And then, then we'll be back with more Star Trek TNG, The Nth Degree. Be right back. Hey, guess what?
What?
We're back.
Oh my gosh.
Those were some stupid commercials.
This is so crazy. It's time for a new character. I have a new character. My name is.
Does it count as a new character if your character sounds like an existing character that you did not create?
This time, my name is Boof Boof. I want yum yums.
I'm not Mickey Mouse.
I want yum yums. Give me yum yums. Yum yums in my tum tums.
Oh, Star Trek.
That's like your standard, like, we got back from the break character.
Yeah, but
Jesse.
Yeah. Hey, Jesse.
Because like eating all them cookies.
Hey, Jesse, what are you doing?
I know, it's our caterer. That's the issue.
Hey, Jesse, what are you doing?
Craft Services is generous on the. It's got Star Trek.
Is that named after Kraft? KRAFT?
No, I think it's C.
It's a different craft.
It's like because we have a craft.
It's because people who like making scrapbooks and
it's
stuff are also good at
talent.
Putting out donuts.
But it's not invented by the craft company.
I think sometimes
probably
it is.
Not. I don't know.
Probably
not. I don't know.
Okay. There's a bunch of cheese.
I don't have an answer for you immediately.
I don't have an answer.
I don't really have an answer for you like totally immediately.
Oh, this actually reminds me of the first Smart Barclays situation.
Okay, can I just cut while you're loading up your notes?
Smarkles.
This is a purely positive comment. Okay. Because in addition to loving this classic, because you haven't done it in a while where you're like counting out stuff, I'm loving that. I'm also really loving the fact that you're doing it completely out of order.
right.
I think the first Smart Barclays moment you mentioned
was number five.
I think it was the fourth Smart Barclays moment.
Number four.
Now you're talking about number one?
Now I'm talking about number one. See, this encourages people to listen back and put them all in order and release that order on the
internet.
Does
it?
It's like a...
So, I mean, yeah.
Smart Barclays!
So, I'm happy to list them all in order, but at the same time, I'm also worried about, like, compromising too much time.
No, it's all good. The flow, bro.
Yeah,
it's all about the flow, bro.
But whatever works, you know,
baby.
Flow,
bro.
So,
I mean, it does highlight the fact that we're all over the fucking place in this episode.
Yeah, I guess we are.
I'm cool with that because there's a certain charm?
Yeah, that's it.
Charm about it?
So when you were like...
Charming to the nth degree.
So when you were talking, like... Da, 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 da,
you said the name of the episode?
Da, 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 that reminded me of the first Smart Barclays moment when Barclays was like, you shouldn't have to wait too long for the results. And Crusher was like, what do you mean? He's like, couldn't you use a global mode in your scanner? It would be a lot faster.
That's not possible.
And so, yeah, and the way Crusher says it, she's like, that's not possible. That's not possible. That, what is it? How she goes like, that's up. She just says it really all bratty. Like, that's not possible.
Oh, just wait, and then, until we get, my favorite line is from Riker, but I'm not going to reveal it yet.
And then, so after she goes, that's not possible. Oh, yeah. She's like, then she goes, we're talking about human cells here, not isolinear circuits. And then she goes, I think you better stick to engineering, Lieutenant.
That was fucked up.
It was a weird, and it was like, it was such a weirdly delivered, like, cheesy, like, it seemed like a high school play or something.
Okay,
I don't know.
There's a consistent thing with Barclay. Well, relatively consistent, certainly in prior with the prior episodes, where everyone treats him like so shitty and uncharacteristic to what you'd expect from those characters, right? From Geordi and Beverly Crusher and Picard and stuff.
Beverly.
There's this tendency,
even Riker,
and including Riker, there's this tendency to be like, oh, that guy, fuck that guy.
Yeah, well, that was in the
when they think they're being nice to him.
Well, right, yeah, in the that was what I was mentioning. I think it was Hollow Pursuits where he was late to a meeting and Riker was just like, Barclay, get your shit together, you know?
Even in this episode when Geordi is being nice to him, certainly the scene reads very nicely that Barclay's like, oh, thanks for having me come in the meeting and in this mission and all that, as you mentioned earlier. But it is kind of funny that Geordi's all like, yeah, man, you know, I figured eventually we got to take you on a fucking mission.
Yeah,
something about
you're
the tone
of
it was like, we know he's a talented person. We already know that. He's been described that. He's on the Enterprise D.
Yeah.
We can presume he has some level of talent.
It's the D, man.
This is not a California class vessel that these people are floating around
on that line. And Geordi talking to Barclay, I also like the part where LaForge is like, something's happened to you, we can't ignore that. And Barclay's get all pissed. He's like, I've finally become the person I've always wanted to be. Do we have to ask why?
Yes.
But then Geordi's response was greatly delivered. It was just like, yeah, I think we do.
I
thought that was a really good.
That was really one of the nicest scenes in the whole thing, because what was good about this episode, I won't say great because of the, I'm wording this in a hilariously obtuse way. In many Star Trek episodes, they don't realize that something bad is happening until way later. Mm. So they caught on to the fact that Barclay was acting different and making a connection to maybe something to do with that probe business that we destroyed. Like, they caught on to that like fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why I say it's not great is because they didn't really do anything about it right away.
They decided it was okay.
Yeah, they didn't do anything about it in a serious way until he took control of the ship.
Yeah.
And even then, they were being good Star Trek
except for people the propulsion. About it. He didn't have the propulsion.
Yeah. So I give it credit for especially Geordi, like early on being like, what the hell is going on here? This is some, like,
I know this guy. I work with this guy. What the fuck?
I still think Crusher should have examined him more thoroughly earlier.
You might be one of the most advanced humans ever.
So here's the kind of shit. Oh, that was the seventh Smart Barclays
moment. Perfectly okay.
That was the seventh Smart Barclays moment when Crusher straight up tells Barclay he's smart. She said, and you talk about
it. But we're not going to do anything about it.
She's like, you're wicked smart.
We're going to let you go. We're not going to examine you anymore. We're just going to turn you loose on the crew.
He might be the smartest person in history.
He had an active corpus callosum and an IQ of 1200 to 1450. Does the IQ go that high? I don't know if it goes that high.
I don't know
how that shit works.
Mine does not go that high.
I think your brain would implode or something. Yeah.
So all this aside, and maybe what I'm about to ask doesn't support that, but I really liked this episode, actually.
Oh, me too. I thought it was a great episode.
Something about it fucks with, it's just like a fucking weird-ass episode. Now, the question I was asking earlier was, what is this episode really about? Because there was some weird-ass, like, sci-fi travel through, like, fucking, like, different, traveling through fucking subspace is weird,
man. There's no moral, you would expect a moral debate about the mechanism and the method that the Cytherians used to explore.
Yeah, you'd expect that, but there was nothing about that. All Riker was just like, psh, right. Those guys, like, they like to explore just like us. Wow, we gotta love that.
Meanwhile, those other aliens, lazy. When Captain Picard gets kidnapped and replaced, and he's in with the other aliens, you know, with the Nausicaan and all that stuff.
Yeah. Nausicaans.
What can I remember? What was that one? It was I know the name of that episode. But anyway, in that episode, they make a big deal. They're like, no, this is fucked up. You don't kidnap people and study them.
Yeah.
Isn't that what happened here?
That's because there was like a false Picard, right?
Yeah, but I mean,
yeah,
that's what happened here, too. They're like, we brainwashed a motherfucker.
It was Barclay and it wasn't Picard.
To convert you, to fly you across the galaxy.
And so there's something really fascinating about the whole idea of, like, getting communicated from creatures from the center of the galaxy. First of all, everything's always the center of galaxy. We've never, ever bothered to try to travel to other galaxies before.
Real quick, important nitpick.
Too far away. Man.
Important nitpick.
It's way too far away, man. That's how far away it is. It's so far away.
You'll never make it.
It's so far away that stories can't reach it.
I know.
Important nitpick.
You'll never make it.
No, important nitpick.
Important nitpick, which is, when they go through the subspace business that Barclay activates and sends them through, and then they arrive at the milky, like, it's all milky clouds. Milky clouds means this is some new place. We've never seen these milky clouds before, ever before.
What about Star Trek V?
Well, nice. But that's another point, by the way. Star Trek V is another point.
That had a big old head, too.
But they get there, and Picard is all, Picard and Riker, they're all like, where the fuck are we? And then the ensign says, we're 30,000 light years from our previous position, if the computer is correct. Mm-hmm. And then Picard's like, well, the center of the galaxy.
Yeah, it's like,
It's like she didn't say which direction.
Yeah,
went.
I noticed that too. Yeah.
The hell can't you be like outside of the galaxy at this stage?
Right. And so,
I
know.
Yeah, you could go in
the Delta
quadrant,
or maybe you're just on the other side of the who knows? You could go a million different directions.
And there was some cool techno babble that that seemed like there was some order to it. They're talking just like
order.
When they was doing that fucking scene where they're traveling through that shit and everything gets fucking weird, my brain just started screaming at that
the
point.
Quantum level oscillation.
Yeah, right. And he's like,
classic case of quantum level oscillation.
Yeah, and he's just doubling in intensity every 12.3 seconds. It's like, why did they bother saying that? I can only guess to make it seem like there was an order to it, like it made sense for some reason.
They could have said anything.
Yeah, they could have. Biocellular disruption is imminent. But when they traveled, so there was this fascinating idea.
Biocellular disruption probably is a name of a great, like, Swedish black metal band.
So when they, I agree.
Probably. Just a guess.
So what that part of that scene, it was all craziness and everything was going insane. And then they get to the center of the galaxy. I couldn't decide. Like, they played some kind of chill music, and I was like, "Oh my god, what just happened?" I'm wondering if it would have been better if it was completely quiet when they reached the center of the galaxy. You know what I'm saying? Like how it was going on with our quantum oscillations, and once they zapped through the galaxy, if they just went silent, and it was just like, if that would give more.
Why didn't they just use the spore drive?
They didn't have a spore drive, stupid.
Yeah, but why don't the Cytherians know about the spore drive?
Maybe they should use.
Why not? Why don't they?
They should use the
Tell me why.
Protostar is what they should have used.
Yeah, why didn't they use a protostar drive?
Okay, so anyway, the point I've been trying, one of the points I've been trying to get at is,
the OnStar
so you
system.
Have all this interesting shit about, like, you know, intelligence, and then Barclays fucking gets into a computer, and then they're traveling through subspace. Which finally, thank you for traveling through subspace. It's like, you know,
thank you.
You know that they, I know it's only for messages, but you know it's meant for more than that. There's not just some,
you know.
Yeah, there's not just some plot device that's there just to send messages in instant time. That shit exists for other reasons too.
Apparently you can do all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. Subspace. But I mean, that's kind of a neat, and then it's like
subspace sandbar.
And it's like the idea of what, for whatever reason, in the center of the galaxy, there's these weird, like, fucking alien things. And that was cool. It just, there was like some kind of neat philosophical things.
Are they just heads, or is that just what you see?
I think it was just a projection, or they could have been specters. I don't know. But
what if they were ghouls?
So there was all these interesting sort of
little green ghouls.
These sort of
spooky.
There was a smattering of this philosophical idea, but part of me thinks that it also felt kind of rushed, like maybe they just reached the center of the universe. Like the whole episode was just about what happens to Barclay, and I couldn't tell if they were actually exploring interesting ideas with all the side stuff, or if that was just simply a method. It's like a wedge salad.
It could have been crab.
People. A wedge salad is the iceberg lettuce is just a vehicle to get blue cheese and bacon in your mouth.
Right.
Was the subspace travel,
which is a noble purchase.
Yeah.
Purpose.
Noble pursuit. So was the traveling through subspace and the Cytherians and all that shit, was that just the iceberg lettuce that got you the blue cheese Barclay in your mouth?
That is an evocative analogy. It is so evocative, I'm
most
afraid
definitely.
I'm going to kind of have to think about that for a few days before I can formulate an adequate response.
That might be for the next podcast.
So I couldn't tell if they were going
to follow a bonus podcast with my response to that.
I couldn't,
evocative analogy.
But I couldn't tell if they were going for something deep or if it was just kind of like, we got to wrap this episode up. Because like you said, they never talked about the moral dilemma of like getting, capturing this fucking ship.
It's like we got here and like we didn't get killed.
And you thought Picard...
quantum level oscillation delay.
Picard like gave that look like he just got pied in the face, you know? And Riker's like, ho, 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 ho. And it's like, wah, wah, you captured us. But you just want to talk because it's cute. And then
it's just another day in space.
So it seemed a little rushed in that respect, but it makes me think the only point of the episode was really, it was like a Gary Mitchell thing where they were just trying to talk about.
Well, so with the Gary Mitchell thing, that was a very focused episode. It was focused on the idea of how does a human behave when given ultimate power. Mm-hmm. And from a philosophical and a sci-fi and a humanistic perspective, it was almost Shakespearean.
Yeah, Barclay was just a puppet in this case.
And so one question I have, well, I'll step back briefly, because I will also say I've always loved this episode. I think it's hard to get the image of Barclay getting lasers in his eyes.
I love
and all that.
Yeah.
All that stuff. It is a fun story. It's interesting. All the little sci-fi bits come together nicely. But when it comes to any sort of thematic or moral stuff, and even some story consistency, it leaves a little bit to be desired.
Well, what's
like we talked about the Troy business, for example. It's a little unclear what they're trying to say with that. It's unclear what they're trying to say with the Cytherians.
And you don't always have to say something like, for example, what was the episode, one of the earlier TNG ones we did, where the ship keeps going in this time loop and they have to figure out how to take it out of the time loop and keep from blowing up?
Where it keeps blowing
that
up.
That wasn't making really any commentary on anything. It was just like you were watching a game being played out in front of you.
It was a cool story.
It was
a short story.
Yeah, it was a cool story. And that's why it worked. And this was like, you couldn't figure out what they were getting.
Well, there were also hooks that they could have hooked onto here that they didn't. And again, it's no big deal. It doesn't really impact the enjoyment of the episode, but it stands out when you compare it to some other episodes that do a better job of this. And for example, I have a question for you, and I this is a rhetoric. I don't know what the answer to this question is. So are we meant to understand that Barclay's refusal to follow orders, like did he do what he did as a function of he got smart and confident, and so this is how Barclay, you know, whatever you call Barclay,
like the Enterprise's speed is a function of warp?
Or are we meant to understand, and there's, I think, more evidence for this perhaps, but are we meant to understand that Barclay was simply reprogrammed in such a way that he'd have no choice but to do this, a la Data in Brothers, when Data gets his recall chip activated and he takes over the Enterprise in order to get back to Dr. Soong?
So I think it's more the latter, but there was a couple... There was what?
Oh, sorry. I was supporting you. Because I agree
yeah.
that it's
It seems like it should be more the latter.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Now you've got the pressure on me.
No, I'm just excited for you guys to trot out some evidence.
There's two, but no, my evidence is actually makes me question the latter.
Point number one and number two, except you're going to say point number two first.
Okay, point number two.
Is there a third point?
I can't remember any points. To say that it's not that he wasn't just a puppet, there was, of course, the scene at the end with the chess piece where it's like, oh, it was Barkley. Part of it, it was like that whole, oh, Barkley's been smart all along. Or maybe this experience left him changed. I don't know. That's not real clear.
Or maybe it was just a funny gag that came up with right. Like, yeah, this is a funny gag.
Yeah, like, didn't think too hard about it. But one part that I didn't know why they really included was when, and it, the only reason I could think is to try to make it seem more like it was still Barkley, was when he was in the laser tag, and Troy like tries to get him to stop what he's doing, and he goes, "I've always had respect for you, counselor, or I've always wanted your respect." Like, why did they bother saying that Barkley always wanted counselor's respect? Now I think they did that just to show that it was still Barkley in there.
It was still Barkley.
But it's confusing. But I think it mostly leans toward the puppet side, which is why Gary Mitchell is more interesting in that respect because that wasn't.
And again, when Riker chooses not to keep those powers, right? So presumably Barkley didn't have a choice, right? That's the interpretation. I think that's the most plausible interpretation. It's also somewhat less interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Because it's more Barkley gets this experience that he has a vague memory of.
And I think they might have tried to make it more interesting by saying he had interest in, he always wanted Counselor Troy's respect to make it seem like he had more agency, but
again,
I don't think it really
worked. I was confused by what he was saying there because it was such a threatening situation. He'd already taken control of the ship.
It was a really
threatening situation. And then he's like, I always wanted your respect. And then she says, well, you've had it. I respect you. And it's like, well, what, I mean, she's kind of, it's an awkward situation because she can say either way, but she doesn't want the ship to get blown up or whatever, so.
Are there more Barkley episodes after this one?
There's like five total in TNG, I think.
Yeah, well, there's the one where he's in the transporter and he's getting nibbled on by evil snakes transporter.
That one's effed up.
Yeah, it's not that great of an episode.
Does that one like come after this one?
That's much later. That's like season seven or something.
So the when he was in, I want to talk a second about that laser place he was in. So how do you explain that to the props people? How much of it is like the props people?
Well, you said it, man. Laser place.
Laser place. But how much of it is like, do the props people have to interpret what was told to them by the person who came up with the idea? Like, someone came up with an idea. They went to props. They're like, we want this machine that kind of has these laser beams blinging around. And they were just like, just think of something.
Maybe
and the props
a drawing.
People, and the props people, oh, there was probably a drawing.
I don't know.
I used to wonder, it's awesome how, like, in Lord of the Rings and all those movies, they have all those statues and the they have all the artwork and the clay statues and shit for inspiration.
Or that
shit.
George Lucas motherfucker, he does that shit.
And that inspiration, which is tight, it seems like, wow, all this artwork went into just making a movie, and that artwork isn't even in the movie. It's just to conceptualize
just
shit.
Hanging out.
And so that's what, and I always thought that was a really fascinating part of the movie.
The chair, I think the point you were getting at, of course, was that the chair was ridiculous. and especially compared to his description, because he said, can I get a work chair or whatever? What was it, do you recall?
He was talking about an alphanumeric.
Well, even before that, when he was just asking for a chair, he was like, can I get a console chair or a work something?
He says, create as follows, workstation chair.
Workstation chair. Now, why does a workstation chair look like some sort of crazy throne?
Yeah, right. I know.
Conan the Barbarian techno throne.
Now, the alphanumeric console, for some reason, he's a position for the left hand. For some reason, alphanumeric console position for the left hand meant 5 feet out of reach of the left hand. You notice it was like way in fucking front of him.
So I guess he's left-handed. I'm left-handed.
Well, I'm just saying it seemed like it was far away.
I'm left-handed. I noticed that he wanted the alphanumeric interface on the left side.
He's left-handed. He's no-handed.
I'm presuming he's left-handed.
He's no-handed.
Although I think we might have seen him right with his right hand.
I just thought maybe the alphanumeric console, why was it so far away from him?
Because they're stupid.
Okay. That whole part was the
was a brain interface.
That was the eighth smart Barkley moment. Was Barkley?
we're missing a couple.
How many are there?
I've heard 1, 2, 4, and 8. So you might have mentioned others. I just don't recall.
Well, seven.
I thought there was a three.
Well, I said their seventh smart Barkley moment was when Crusher tells.
Oh yes, that's right. When she says you're smart.
You're smart. Yeah. But then after that is the eighth smart Barkley moment where they're freaking out.
I thought there were only seven.
Where they're freaking out an engineer and Barkley is like he's talking. bitching about how like the computer interface is too slow, which is a weird.
Did you say either freaking out in engineering or freaking out an engineer?
In engineering.
Okay,
sorry.
I heard an engineer.
Sorry. Everyone in the engineering.
It's like they're hoving above an engineer being all like, boo.
Everything was going to go to shit.
Little spooky.
And everyone was freaking out. And Barclay was talking about how the computer interface was too slow, which is a weird concept to imagine. Is it just saying it's calculating slowly? What does it mean to
interface.
Say that?
He means the interface.
That's what I mean. But
thoughts in his brain, he couldn't get them. Through to the Argus array.
So it's like when Microsoft Word introduced the ribbon and now it takes 4 clicks to do 1 click or something like that. You know, is it just take more clicks to get to where he needs to go?
Oh, you're saying that was like a step back.
Right.
Some people didn't like it.
Yeah.
I don't have an opinion on it, but some people liked it.
Man, I don't even have an opinion.
But so is it just saying it's like he requires too many button presses?
I think so.
He's saying he's too slow. He's blaming the interface, but he's physically too slow. He should say, I'm too slow.
He has
slow
a
to
horrible
do...
meat body.
Yeah.
A disgusting floppy meat body.
Well, he does.
A totally useless, slow meat body.
So
mind speed.
Just chunky bits of meat so that he can wiggle around with his brain meat.
And so he's obsessed about this interface. He storms out about the interface. This is the 8 smart Barclay moment because he makes his own. And this is when it gets really fucking weird. That's the point where shit just gets
weird. Totally lawnmower, man.
Yeah. It's a neural scan interface. He's like, there's no such device on file. He's like, no problem. Here's how you build it.
Let me tell you how to build it.
Oh, Christ.
I'll tell you how to build it.
Are you for real?
But that's when shit started going batshit.
I'll tell you
the episode
what my
started
magic
going batshit at that point.
Yes.
And in a good way. I enjoyed it. I was like, this
was
is fucking
totally
weird.
It was good. It was good sci-fi, good batshitness, good close to getting to some like ideas, mm-hmm. but not quite, but enough to think about them. Right? It was almost like they were like, you know, we've got this Barclay business, and he's gotten all this extra intelligence and
Sparkly
creativity. Sparkly, that's a good one. He's got all this going, so obviously we could do a whole story about what's the impact on this person's life, mm-hmm. what's the impact on his relationships, what are the moral and philosophical questions, what are some technical questions about what is his future just living in the bowels of the ship now? Like, mm-hmm. like we could do all that, but you know what? Let's not worry about that. Let's do some more like slow motion, like whoa. and the people watching, they'll think about all that other shit on their own. And I could buy them thinking that because that's exactly what we're doing. We're all discussing all the things they did not in fact mention.
And it's
because they didn't mention them.
And yeah, and it's also just the classic thing of episodic television where it's like never talked about again. They changed that. It's like all the new technology they found. Like, you know, they could have probably got from the Cytherians a way to, because originally that computer was supposed to like teach them how to like warp around through subspace. You'd think they'd get to hold on to that tech. Obviously, they don't for story because it's just a story and all that.
That
stuff.
Would be crazy.
And they never made any jokes about like they were never joking with Barclay about that. Remember that time when you took over the ship?
Right.
You hit on Troy. It's like, but it kind of worked in the end. Remember that?
But now we can travel to the center of the galaxy whenever we want to the what is it where all the that's where wizards come from? Isn't that where like
the Milky Clouds,
the witches and TAS the
wizards.
TAS?
Was that in the center of the galaxy?
I can't remember.
I remember that. Yeah, that was, I mean, they were in a different dimension. So they, I can't remember.
They were from a different dimension.
That shit was wild.
It could have been outside the other way. You go the other way in the galaxy.
Yeah.
And you leave the galaxy.
Yeah. Go listen to that podcast. Nobody listens to enough of the TAS episode. Yeah. It always aggravates me.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
Aggravates me. They're some of the best episodes we've ever done.
Ever.
And there's some good episodes of Star Trek too. Go.
We just did one last week.
You don't even watch the show. Just listen to the podcast. They'll be entertaining. You'll figure it out.
What are you worried about?
What are you worried about?
So I just mentioned the 8 smart Barclay moment. I might as well quickly mention 9 and 10 because they feed off each other. They just feed off each other.
Is there 11?
Do you mean like one of those situations where like a snake, like a python is eating a crocodile, but then the crocodile is eating the snake's tail and it happens in Florida? You
yeah,
know,
it's like
those
a
things?
Yin-yang Some Escher sort of kind of thing,
Ouroboros.
Right? Yeah.
Like a horrific, hellish yin-yang?
Yes, exactly.
The circle of life writ large in the Florida Everglades?
So I was...
Invasive species battling against the native fauna?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, exactly like that. The 8 smart Barclay moment.
Why is
Florida a state?
You were like tossing out these really clever analogies. I thought, give it a try.
I'm all for it. I appreciate it.
I'll put that analogy coat on.
You just put an analogy code on by talking about analogy codes. Analogy codes. Or is that a metaphor? Is that a metaphor?
Metaphor.
A sarmily?
Hey, you got, y'all got in the metaphor.
Metaphors?
You got in metaphors.
Datar.
Metaphor. I mean, I'll take a simile. You what's got one, but I prefer a metaphor.
What's a metaphor anyway?
It's a dick fool.
I'm a gopher. Go for this, go for that. All right. So I would talk about the eighth smart Barkley moment was when he learns, when he makes his mind interface and it gets weird. Now we've reached like sort of the apex of what he can do. And now everything after that is just icing on the cake. Because the ninth smart Barkley moment was the conversation between him and Geordi. When Geordi was fixing it and he's like, what do the people think of me? And Geordi's like...
When Geordi's trying to sneak around. Yeah. Jeffries too.
And so, right. And so this conversation is meant to tell us that Barkley has now reached infinity, basically. He's like the mental singularity.
He's like hell. Or like, he's like all talking.
Yeah, he understands everything. It's like,
I think the way I envision that, if that actually happened, I don't think he'd be talking to nobody.
Yeah, probably not.
I think at a certain point, you don't bother talking to Geordi or Worf.
It wouldn't be as interesting to watch on TV, I guess.
Yes.
But you're right. I agree. I mean, that's not a good, excuse.
You could do it in a book.
Yes, a book, you could do it.
You could do that in a book.
A la The Expanse.
Yeah.
Yes.
The writers of The Expanse have done a great deal of psychedelics.
It seemed like this seemed like psychedelic influence this episode a little bit too.
A little bit.
I was watching some shit and like a lot of the fans.
You were watching shit.
You were watching shit for breakfast.
Speaking of psychedelics,
you're just looming over your toilet bowl. I wonder what it's gonna do next.
When you start like reading about all fantasy books, you start to think that all the authors were fucking taking something.
Oh, they must have.
Like, a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, so wait. 80s. I was.
Can we come right back? Can we take a quick break and
let's
then
take a
then
quick
finish
one.
Up with the with starting off with your point.
Yes.
All right. So we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll start off with Dan's point.
Yay!
Maybe he'll be a funny voice.
All right. We'll be right back. Okay. We're back. Ready for Dan's point.
This is my new character. I am Boofy Boof Boof. That was the name of my last character.
You're turning into Justin Roiland with his two characters.
Yeah,
it's me. Gobbledygook. Flargan Argnark.
So, Barkley makes mind computer at ninth. Barkley reaches infinity. Tenth. Now that we know Barkley's reached infinity, now he's established a will entirely of his own. He's still Barkley because he wants Troy's respect. But like the conversation with Troy and him going against the captain.
Is this
now,
a Barkley number 10?
That's the number 10. And that's when he gains his own.
But is it a will if all he's doing is working under the demands of his reprogrammed brain to get to the Cytherians, is it truly a will of his own?
That's a good question. And is there...
he wants to go, he's like, we got to go there. It's not like we're going to go the 30,000 years, the other 30,000 light years in the other direction.
I mean, now we're getting into that question about like, is there free will and shit like that? But like,
I'm not
intention
really.
Versus non-intention.
Yeah, not really. I'm just saying in this case.
Yeah, I think I know what you're
right?
saying. Yeah.
It's like,
that's a good point.
He gets all smart. And if he truly had free will, I think we can assume, they haven't given us a reason. I mean, they did. The Cytherians programmed him to be, you should come here. It's a homing beacon. Whereas if he had free will, but the same level of intelligence, maybe he would have been like, let's go check out the Delta Quadrant. I hear they got some space creeps floating around out there.
Gross faces.
They got the Kazon, they got the Hirogen. They got that species 8538675309.
They got that Neelix.
That's a good point you make. It's a good point.
Neelix the space.
I guess the 11th smart Barkley was...
He names his cat Neelix.
My 11th and 12th are kind of weak sauce. The 11th was just kind of like when Barkley finally, like, he outsmarted...
Oh, wait, there's an 11th and 12th?
Yeah.
Like a turkey
the
gravy?
The 12th is the last one. When Geordi...
What's a weak sauce? A turkey gravy?
It's like Shakespeare's 12th night.
Were those weak sauces?
There's 12 things in a dozen.
There's 12 steps. There's 12
Except
months.
For a baker's dozen.
Which is 13.
But a baker's dozen was not out of generosity. It was due to the very strict taxes and other punishments that would be levied against bakers that were shown to not provide a sufficient amount of wheat in their baked
goods. That sounds
goods.
Like propaganda.
No, it's for real, bro.
So the 11th...
For real. They gave the extra one to be like, hey, see?
That's baker propaganda.
See? I gave you plenty of bread.
So
I put plenty of wheat in the bread. I didn't water down the wheat, none at all.
The 11th was like, Picard's like, Picard to LaForge, status. And then Geordi's like, ready, Captain. And he's like, proceed. And LaForge is like, acknowledged. And then Barkley's like, commander. And then LaForge goes, what? And Barkley goes, you're too late. And that was
can we do a bonus episode that's just you reading a script?
Yeah.
Yeah, just
in this style.
Yeah.
Like an entire script.
Just an entire script of an episode?
Yes.
I would do like a book on tape?
Yes.
Would that be technically plagiarism?
No, because I'm... My knowledge of you would be adding, consciously or otherwise, you would be adding enough.
So satire would still fall under satire.
It would be. I'm quite certain we'd be fine.
So okay, so that was a moment where shit was starting to go wacky, and he was actually implementing his shit. I swear, I watched this episode three times, and I swear Geordi's voice sounds higher pitched in that scene. I swear.
Just in that scene.
All
right, give us an example to demonstrate the difference in the previous scenes and this scene.
I don't know if I feel comfortable doing that.
Well, you say
that.
It was like lower in the other ones.
Yeah, it was just like, it's like, no problem, Reg. No problem, Reg.
No problem, Reg.
Yeah, I think we do. And then when he goes, ready, Captain, and Picard's like, proceed. He's like, acknowledged. That's kind of
acknowledged.
Like acknowledged.
Sounds like Janeway.
My theory is that they went over time by like 2 seconds, and they couldn't cut any more material, so they just they sped up the actual video to make it. Of course, they could have cut a little bit out of that 12th Smart Barkley moment, which I just wrote insanity.
What?
I just wrote for the 12th Smart Barkley moment, all I wrote was insanity.
Okay, does that mean something, or were you writing a personal note to yourself?
I guess it was really just the it was just the effect.
Were you commenting on the Smart Barkley list?
It was the it was basically
damn, you're like, bro. It's gotta be 12. It can't be 11, it's gotta be 12. There's gonna be 12 moments.
It was really insanity. It's an extension of the list, because it's just the effect of what all of Barkley's actions. The final effect, the result in the 12th Smart Barkley moment, the result is insanity when they're traveling through subspace, everything's getting really fucked up. Data's talking about quantum level oscillations. That shit was fucking crazy. It was fucking crazy. Like, this episode would be really messed up if you were fucking, like, tripping balls watching it, I swear, because
where we're just tripping.
He's just ascending closer and closer to some kind of conscious singularity.
We can watch the episode while we do the podcast.
Yes.
Like, when
then we could listen to an old podcast that's unrelated to the episode that we're watching.
Like, they're talking about some fucking Einstein talking about 26 dimensions instead of 10. Yeah,
that seems
and
pretty
they,
funny.
They travel through subspace on some quantum level, and everything's vibrating and going nuts. It's like the brain exploding in slow motion.
Brains.
And right as the insanity is about to be too much, it just like goes all quiet and like, you know, into some place that might as well be heaven or something. Like, it's a really fucking weird
milky clouds.
There's a really weird ascension into this peak, climactic peaking moment.
You
that's
said
like,
ascension.
Yeah, it was a fucking, and that was fucking weird. But and that's what that intrigued me a lot about that episode, is it just got kind of fucking weird, man.
I like it when the probe is like chasing them, and like it keeps chasing them, and Riker's all like, "At warp 2?"
I also enjoyed that, because you'd be like, why not just go up to warp 9 or something? You know,
right? What is it, like the 22nd century? Or
it was funny.
Sometimes they were better at being like, you know, we got like resources and stuff. We got to balance this shit out against need.
Well, I'd mentioned this earlier.
Need for speed.
I thought it was funny. Speaking of need for speed, it was moving like a car. It was like going in reverse, and then I like did an about turn or whatever, and like started flying off.
The Enterprise D does that a lot, but it looks cool when it does it. I think when you sometimes see other ships do that, it kind of looks more
anything goes on
hulking.
The D.
But the D feels like he can back up all right, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean?
It's a comfy ride.
It's a comfy ride.
You can look at its little rear-facing photon torpedo port.
Yeah, that thing, yeah.
You know, photon torpedo ports. You know, the rear-facing ones.
Little D-butt.
Looks like a little butt.
Looks like a little butt.
Little D-butt. Yeah.
Any other major points to make about this episode?
Or
shall we
not shift
into our odds and ends? And the other closing down bits.
Let's see. The 5th Smart Barkley was when he hit on Troy. Smart Barkley.
I forgot there was some we skipped over.
It was when he hits on Troy. That's the 5th Smart Barkley. And she's like,
you might have mentioned that one.
No, I didn't mention that, because I the one point I wanted to make. Well, I did mention that in a circuitous kind of way.
I
didn't
specify.
You're right.
It's time to specify.
She talked about how she enjoyed his performance, and he's like, "You're a very forgiving audience," which is a bullshit line that was not smooth, because it's very obvious he gave a good performance, and the feign like modesty is just, that's just tacky.
it is a little. Well, he was an asshole. So
what about his French accent?
When he hits on Troy, or makes a pass at her, whichever, whichever
you feel more comfortable
language
with,
language you prefer. I thought when I see that scene, I think, okay, we're getting where the indicator here is that Barkley is more confident. He's smoother in his speech and addressing Troy, and he's still a creep. And I know that a lot of people won't interpret his behavior as being creepy, but to me, it kind of was, because it was like, I you know my deal with you. You know I had holographic images of you in a metaphorically sexual way.
That's but so did Geordi about that one.
And that's not good either.
Yeah, right.
But
Geordi
but
has his problems as well. There's a whole problem with in engineering.
Yeah, it's typical.
On the D.
I'm not saying I'm not suggesting there's a problem with flirting with somebody that you're attracted to. It's just, I don't know. There was something about it. Well, there was an arrogance to it that made it. And he, even though he knew that it might not work, and I think what we're supposed to get from that is that, even knowing that it's unlikely to work, he was still willing to make the attempt, because that is not what normal Barkley would do.
Yeah, that requires an extensive amount of extensive amount of confidence that he didn't have.
So from that storytelling perspective,
yeah,
it perfect sense, and it fulfills its function very well. But it just came off a little
creepy.
And that might be my own biases.
It did.
But to me, it just was like, ugh. You're still a little like, ugh.
He wanted to see her, the Zalnias with her. He wanted to see her Zalnia is a thing.
No way, Barkley.
What's a Zalnia?
It's some kind of plant in
Star Trek. Is it a Star Trek plant?
It's a 2367 Reginald Barkley, imbued with newfound confidence given him by the Cytherian probe, suggested to Council Troy that she might walk with him in the Arboretum to see the Zalnias as they were in bloom in the nth degree. So I guess this was the only place it was mentioned.
Is it like a vine? You think it's some kind of vine with some happening flowers?
Maybe it's a perennial.
It's a love vine.
But do you know, when Barkley stood up after she left, he almost did the Picard maneuver, you know, the pull down.
He did. Well, they all do that to a certain extent. Because Picard does it like the most, because he's getting up and down a lot.
Wardrobe doesn't fit. Right.
Yeah, and he did do it, but he you could tell he was trying not to do it, because he's trying to be smooth about it. But those things must suck to wear. Enterprise, we've said this before, Enterprise has the most comfortable uniforms, but Discovery, they get the best shoes. They got sneakers on Discovery.
Yeah, Discovery sneakers, and even their boots are pretty tight.
Yeah. Nice, they got nice.
All right, more odds and ends.
I think I'm just about done with the Barkley list. I think this is the last one. Is the six smart Barkley moment?
Six.
There's a bonus moment, but
bonus.
But which I kind of mentioned when Geordi talks about. Yeah, I think we do. Talking about, you know, why do we need to ask why? It's when Barkley is teaching teaches Einstein math essentially. And so it brought up an interesting point though about how math is fucking weird and awesome and kicks ass. But people like, I remember watching some show talking about there's actually 13 dimensions, and it's like, you know,
theory offers a few different,
and I think string theory is
11
is,
dimensions, 15 I think, dimensions.
I think string theory has been
depends whether you're into brain theory or not.
I think string theory,
B-R-A-N-E theory, brains, M brains.
I think
not like a fucking membrane. It's an M brain. I'm just tossing it out.
Is it M-brain?
I'm just demonstrating. I have read an article or two.
Is it a B shirt? No, man, it's a Z shirt. So people,
Tuggers, well, T-tuggers? What was that?
So anyways, I think string theory is out of fashion right now. I've heard
string theory. The issue with string theory is that the math is all brilliant and works out. There's as yet no way to test it.
Yeah, so
and that makes it hard to really look into.
So, you know, people wonder why we hypothesize that there's like, you know, 10 dimensions or 13 dimensions, and that's why. It's because math is why. They just add dimensions to make their equations work. But essentially they're like, my equation doesn't work. Let's add a dimension. And I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong. I think
it's totally valid, but it does not necessarily
abstract and weird. Like, what's the deal with this cosmological constant?
What's the deal? Because here's the thing.
The cosmological constant, where does it come from? It's got to come from somewhere. It's not just some random fucking number that exists.
Einstein came up with the cosmological constant, and then he grew tired.
Grew weary of this cosmological constant.
No, he decided he didn't like it, and so he sort of abandoned it. But more recent, and again, I ain't no physicist. I don't know shit, but my understanding is that more recently it's come back as a concept, but maybe in a different way than Einstein was thinking.
Right. So I remember using the cosmological constant when calculating certain, you know, extraterrestrial or celestial. Sorry.
I used it last week when I went to 7-Eleven.
Yeah. Yeah. Those fucking big bites are huge.
Isn't math They're just so big sort of you need to use a cosmological constant. Human mind,
like, it's just a total abstraction that represents it's like an interface to
just
the,
how our brain works.
It's an interface to reality in a way.
It describes real things but in ways that we invented, and some of those things are arbitrary even though they're mathematical in some senses, right?
Right, but it all sort of holds some kind of key to like everything. You know,
the key to everything.
But anyway, so cosmological constant, it's like pi. Pi, we know where pi comes from. It's the circumference divided by the diameter. But what creates the cosmological constant? And I am not qualified to answer this, and I might even be asking the wrong question.
You might not be qualified to
ask it.
I think
you're asking the wrong
people. I might not be qualified to even ask this question. Yes. But the thing is, it's like there's 13 dimensions, there's a cosmological, dark matter, there's all this shit we like, just kind of like, it makes the math work, but...
But here's the reason...
There are 12... Smart Barclay.
Vulcan was the invented planet to make the rotation of planetary bodies. It was a made up planet to account for the planet's motions in the sky.
Until they figured some more shit out. Yeah. But the way to think of it is it's not invalid, but you have to go beyond that. And it's not invalid.
No, it's not invalid.
Like, for example, with evolution. Right? Evolution said, okay, we have this bone at this level, and we have this other bone down here at this level. We expect to find in between them a bone that is in between these two other bones.
Right.
And then they go look at that level, and they're like, oh, word up! We were right!
Yeah.
The thing is
with the string theory is they got the first part where they're like, this makes sense to be here. These extra dimensions, it makes sense from what we're looking at. But then it's like, okay, now the trouble is how are you gonna show that?
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Griscott.
Right. So yeah, Griscott is Griscott. Which puzzles me, because that's an Austrian phrase. It's Great not very, Scott. It's an Austrian, maybe a little bit in southern Bavaria. I'm not familiar enough with Swiss German to know if Griscott is.
But you know about Swiss cheese.
Yeah, it basically means like the grace of God. Griscott, you know, it's like you say it as a greeting
in
Austria, but it's also an exclamation.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, God damn.
Yeah, right.
But like in a nicer way,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know?
God damn. I said, God damn.
All right, odds and ends. I have one. Did you finish up all your business with the numbers?
I did have a bonus one. That's not.
Oh,
bonus. It's not a Barclay being smart moment. It's a Barclay fails at being smart moment.
Uh oh.
I thought at some point Barclay was going to circumvent Geordi's monitor prevention process. You know how they disconnected the audio? I thought that at some point Barclay was going to be like, haha, I've been listening all along. But
using lasers on the window panes.
At minimum, he would at least know that they were cutting him out of the situation. He would know that
I think
those motherfuckers are talking about me.
But you could tell that it was muted.
Yeah. So the whole point of that was obviously just a total plot device, just to be able to give him a chance to talk. Yeah.
You gotta give those guys a chance. So, right,
but that was a Barclay fails at being smart moment.
I didn't
get past the monitor prevention.
I liked when my favorite line of the whole episode, and I can't even remember the exact context. I think maybe Worf says something. It's something about like something not working or whatever. I wish I had it in my notes earlier, but I accidentally deleted it. But all I know is when Riker is all like, "What?
Oh yeah."
What?
Yeah.
it was somehow uncharacteristic. Somebody said something to him. I have a feeling like it was Worf or something.
Yeah, so Anaya is going, "Yes, sir, Helm's not responding." Worf goes, "Captain, we have lost computer control."
What? What?
He also did that before when Barclay said it would take him 2 days.
What? What?
What?
Okay.
Well, there was the word seven was used 8 times in this episode.
Are you doing the word searching again?
I could have it ready for you in 2 days.
What?
You did it there too.
What?
What?
Interrogative.
My favorite line in the episode was call back to when Jesse was saying Picard didn't want anything to do with this episode. Mm-hmm. When Riker goes, "How do we get him out of there?" And LaForge goes, "We don't, not without killing him." And Picard just goes, "This is an intolerable situation."
It's like this is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like there's this look of defeat on his face, but also like disgust. He's like, fuck this shit.
He's like, the Argus Array is all fucked up. This dude's all fucked up. Now my ship's all fucked up. Jesus.
He looks like he just ate a, like a big booger or something. I don't know. But it's like
they should have had him walk into his office and then his fish would just be dead and floating at the top of the tank.
Man,
and Picard would just look at it and he'd just be like, figures.
Yeah. I've no wish to harm him, but I cannot allow Mr. Barkley to continue to act as the computer. I don't care how smart he is. That's funny. But yeah, that was my favorite line.
Odds and ends.
I mean, I have another one, but I mean, you guys go.
Go for it, dude.
I just wanted to quickly mention that Riker was a total cornball in this whole episode. There were not many scenes with him, but the ones he was in, he was totally corny.
Like the first one with Barkley explaining the situation and
yes,
Riker's
yes.
all like befuddled.
Yeah, right. He's like, oh, I see that. Mr. Barkley, everyone's still trying to figure out, I don't get it. That was like total cornball. But even before that, at the beginning of the episode, it almost seems like a hollow dream sequence or something when Barkley's performing, mm-hmm. because in the audience, when Riker's like looking at Troy and they're all smiling, it seems like someone's having a dream almost, because it's so fucking out of character and weird. And then especially when after it's over, Riker goes, bravo, and Troy's like, wonderful. It seems like a fucking dream sequence. Yeah. And so him smiling
except for Data being all like, what the
fuck? Yeah, that was
the fuck is wrong? I don't want to be human anymore.
That was a fucking weird moment for Data too. That was like really bizarre. That's the only time Data's looked like upset or disgusted or anything.
He's just like, man.
And then there, Riker was corny when he was like, you know, looking at Troy and be like, you said he made a pass at you, but you failed to mention when he was successful or not. And then another part was at the end, you know, when the Cytherians told, like when Barkley was like, they just want to know you. And then Riker's like looking at Picard. He's like, oh, how cute is that? Like, this is what we do. You know, it's like just all find all this bullshit to satisfy the curiosity of this other species. Like, you know, and Riker's like, ho, ho, ho. You know, I don't know. Something about Picard throughout this or Riker throughout this episode. I thought he was being kind of a cornball, but not in a bad way. I appreciated it. It was fun.
No,
it was, it's just a fun episode. I thought so.
I like,
it was not boring.
I like that. This is one of those rare examples where they took Worf's advice.
Yes, I noticed that too.
Didn't work, but Worf is he's like, I you know, I should just full phasers, Captain.
Yeah. Exactly.
Ken Picard's like, yeah, okay, go for it.
I think that was, yeah, Worf, that I think that was a scene where Worf goes, he's like, Captain, I'm picking up an unidentified device, 1.8 kilometers, he says kilometers from the
which earth. Is real fucking close.
That was a weird shot because when he says, I'm picking up an unidentified device, you shots on Worf, and then from off screen, Picard pops up from below off screen and goes on screen. And it was a really weird shot.
There's a lot of weird shots because
Picard pops from off screen and then he says on screen. And it was like, what the fuck just happened? You know? And you just, where did he come from? He came from below somewhere.
This was directed by Rob Legato. And I forgot to look up if he's done any other, I'm not familiar with the name. I don't know if he's done any other TNG or not. I forgot
Mr.
to look
Roboto,
it up. It's written by Joe Manosky, which explains how it's like got some good, strong character and sci-fi elements to it. But this Rob Legato fella, I think, had some interesting ideas. In addition to, we already talked about the quantum oscillation business.
Oh yeah, every 12.3 doubles every 12.3 seconds.
How do you titillate an ocelot?
You oscillate its tits a lot.
Exactly.
And you put a bottle in front of me, but something about a frontal lobotomy. Or
don't give me a frontal lobotomy.
You can pick your nose and your friend's nose, but you can't pick your butt or something.
It's all rerun. Rerun, like in What's Happening.
What's Happening Now?
Or What's Happening
Rob
Now?
Rob Legato worked on Reading Rainbow.
Oh, did he? That's interesting. I don't think he did a bad job directing here, but there are some uncharacteristic things, because in addition to the oscillating tits a lot, there's the whole business with Barkley when he decides to go to the holodeck, because he's like, we need a better interface. And he's running down he's like running through corridors. There's one corridor shot where it's all like the camera's backing up while he's running towards it. And it's all like low down. And it's like he's the $6 million man, however many millions of dollars it costs these days.
$100,000 bar.
And it's just bizarre to watch Barkley just running full fucking tilt through these corridors, but that one shot in particular just completely counter to what you generally have seen, certainly on TNG.
Yeah. On things like that, do you attribute it to they don't know what they were doing, or they were trying to go for something really extra weird? And
a little of both.
Yeah.
And one thing it's fun to think about, and sometimes you can find evidence in the various things that were written about the episodes, production diaries and things like that. In these old seasons where they were producing 26 episodes a season, you can notice things towards the end of the season, right? not that they always filmed 100% in order, but it was fairly in order. And they have a plan for the season. They have a budget for the season. And then they start filming the season. And my understanding from reading about those writers' rooms and the production offices
reading
and all
about
that
the
stuff
writers' rooms
is that they've got a bunch of episodes kind of mostly written to begin with. They start shooting them, but then they've still got a bunch of episodes to write. And time starts slipping away and they have to, and all, and there's problems with the production or this, that, or the other thing. And so things come up and that the ends of seasons are often somewhat harried.
Yeah.
And that can have both positive and negative effects. I think this episode is a great episode, but as we talked about earlier, maybe a couple things they didn't quite iron out as much as they wanted to, and maybe some production things that made them go in a certain direction or another, and some editing things they had to do to get into the right amount of time and all that.
Yeah.
And that's what it feels like to me, that they're just sort of like, you go film this episode as quickly as you can. And he was like, all right, how's this? We'll make this scene stretch out by making it all like wobbly. And they're all like, oh, quantum oscillation.
Yeah. That was yeah, kind of uncharacteristic, strange, and like just, I don't know. Yeah, it was a weird kind of thing.
Weird business.
You like my words? I guess that made me think of how at the end Troy did give a message, and I liked her message. You know, that almost everyone has a moment in their lives when they exceed their own limits, achieve what seems to be impossible. It says you almost always feel a sense of loss when you lose it, or when you're past that point. But it is possible to carry something of that experience through the rest of your life in ways that you aren't even aware of, which I guess the thing about him doing the chess thing was, but I wasn't real clear about that. But I did like that message. And so you could say that was the point of the episode, but there was a few things going on. So it's really hard to say that.
I like that message too. It didn't necessarily connect to much.
Yeah, right.
It was sort of loosely connected to Barkley. The message was
because
good,
once
though.
Again, he was a puppet, we assume, of like those people.
Exactly.
So.
I think it's a good message. I think certainly Jesse and I think can identify with it ever since we did that episode on Fairhaven and Spirit Folk. Dan, you were out for that one. But that was just, I mean, you know.
Oh, that was the St. Patrick's Day one.
I don't know that it was St. Patrick's Day. I think we were just drinking a lot.
It was just Irish themed that we were drinking.
We were just drinking a bottle of whiskey while doing that
episode. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe that wasn't.
Dan was off on a special mission. And
secret mission.
So Jesse and I had to do an episode together. And
I was wearing Picard's ninja outfit.
We did Fairhaven and Spirit Folk at once, which I advise.
That was a wild podcast.
It was a wild, wild ride. Never reach those heights again. Anyway,
there was some weird. There was some weird jab at playing video games because like Troy was dissing on Barkley for withdrawing into the holodeck, and he was like acting as the same as the holodeck,
which is the same as the holodeck episode. Troy. It was like, you know, don't get lost in the holodeck.
Yeah, I mean that's what crossword puzzles were right back in the day. Crossword puzzles were like going to the holodeck
and
yeah.
bicycles.
No, my favorite is when you find out that when novels became popular because they were new media at the time, all these parents and teachers were like, you got to ban these novels. Yeah. These damn kids, all they're doing is sitting under trees reading fiction stories.
Right.
They should be learning Latin and learning how to sew and whatnot. Bible. And these women are learning to, they're getting ideas, sitting under trees, reading books about fantasy lands.
So, right. So I'm not.
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. What the hell are they talking about?
I understand what.
Jane Eyre.
Yeah.
I understand the message they're getting across by saying it's different because it's interacting and not withdrawing. I think there's something to be said about that. But at the same time, I thought it was very clumsily sort of expressed. I thought there was a point to it. Maybe it wasn't clumsy.
Tacked on a bit.
It was a little tacked on. I never liked that argument of like, you know, oh, you're playing some stupid wasted of your time thing. It's like, well, fuck you. What are you doing? You know, like, well, I go looked at a sunset. It's like, great. That's great for you. Well, you know,
it's the TNG style, is the TOS style, is the TAS style, and to kind of try to wrap it up. Not that they didn't do it elsewhere, but I think a little less on Voyager and on Deep Space Nine straight up. Sometimes the message at the end of the show would be like, is there a fucking point to anything? I don't know. Find out next week.
if you go into the holodeck with other people, that would be a sociable version of going to the holodeck, right?
Yeah. Bashir and O'Brien.
Do you think that's
and
more
Dax and Kira?
Do you think that's more or less sociable, or the same as going into one of those lower decks holopods that were connected by holotubes? You know how they each had their individual
I have to. That's a newer technology introduction,
apparently.
So I want to think about that a little more because I kind of like that in some ways, but it depends. It's kind of that whole debate between multiplayer versus single player games. Are single player games antisocial, or why would you call them? They don't need to be considered antisocial. Unless it's like, okay, what would be antisocial? And I can demonstrate, because this was me, is when I used to play Elder Scrolls Online all the time, and I refused to interact with anybody. Yeah. All I did was, like, I wandered around the world, and I felt cool. I was like, oh, that's cool. Look at all these real people walking around. I can see their names above their thing. It's just like, I'm going to go in the woods and just sort of mine for, like, mushrooms and wood.
You're withdrawing.
I was in the woods. It was nice. I was like, okay, I'm going to the village to sell my stuff now. Oh, look at all those people. But I gotta get back to the woods.
Presumably, holopods, you can network with people, but is that the same as playing online video game with someone, or in the same local co-op in the same room? I don't know. That doesn't really matter.
That's like, is it cheating if you have sex with a robot?
Yeah, right.
It's a debate.
It's a debate. It's a real debate.
It's a weirdly relevant debate.
Do they
debate.
Have emotions? That's right.
No, that's...
Are they sentient? Are they self-aware?
I don't think we're quite at that stage yet, but I think...
If you have a self-aware dildo.
That might be the difference, though. That might be the difference in whether or not it is infidelity, is if the thing is... If the creature is self-aware. Hey, self-aware creature? Infidelity. Not self-aware if it's just a hunk of metal and plastic and rubber.
This is bringing me down a line of questioning that popped into my head that I really don't want to get into, about, like, what's okay to, you know, what kind of creature is it okay to, you know, pleasure yourself with?
Are you going straight to bestiality?
I mean, I didn't want to.
I think you did.
I didn't want to.
See, for that, you'd be mad for a different... If somebody did that, you'd be, like, upset for a different reason than cheating, I think.
Yes, I think that's a fair.
I think I'm upset right now.
Yeah, that's why I'm sorry. I didn't.
You make a cogent and fair point there. All right. I think that's any other odds and ends. Otherwise, let's close this
down.
That's
it for me.
That's
man.
It.
I got these crunchy crackers I want to eat off of the podcast. Yeah.
Just like Janeway and Tuvix, we can't forget that Picard ordered Barclay's death.
Yes,
he did. Nobody talks about it,
and there's no debate about it.
There's no debate about it, but he ordered Barclay's death. Yeah. But I mean, Barclay. I guess it's what you have to do on a starship. Like, there was that whole episode where you had to, which was the one where they were in a holodeck program and to be a good commander or whatever, you had to order someone to their death.
Troy had to, during her command test, she had to order.
So, I mean, I guess it's not the same thing. Tuvix was a different scenario because he wasn't directly affecting them, but.
Yeah, but in Tuvix, they never talked about the morality of, or specifically what happened to the flower. Right? Tuvix was...
He was part of...
Helix, Tuvok, and the flower. What happened to the flower?
Yeah, what happened to the flower?
They never... They should have a... Maybe it's in a novel. Maybe there's a novel about it or something. Write us in and let us know
if
there's a novel...
Maybe we should make up a story.
Called, like, The Orchid of Tuvix.
Whoa, that's kind of awesome. I like that title.
We can do it ourselves.
We could.
Get into the novel writing game.
Anyway, if I was Barclay, I'd be a little bummed out about that being ordered. Like, at one point, my boss wanted to kill me. You know,
but sort of understandable.
It is, but still a bummer.
So,
still uncomfortable.
Hopefully, you all out there in the audience got something out of this.
Yeah, we took the approach of the episode in delivering this episode. You know? Just kind of like throwing some things everywhere.
No real meaning message, but entertaining.
Yep.
Entertaining, nevertheless. Okay. So
another great episode.
Yes.
Yeah, I was a
excellent.
Big fan.
Next week is Discovery.
A silly episode, but it was really fun.
Next week is Discovery. Because Discovery comes back. So next
coming
week
back.
Is Discovery. Discovery's... If you're not interested in Discovery, no worries. We've got like 100 a bunch of episodes. If you go to the website, www.itsgotstartrek.com, in addition to other things, you can sort by category, by specific show.
It'll just bring up
only those podcast episodes that cover whatever it is. TAS, TOS, DS9, Voyager, TNG.
It helps us decide
Enterprise.
Like which episodes we're going to talk about next, because we forget which ones we talk about.
We try to keep them together, you know, keep them in line. But anyway, you can do that.
You can do that.
If you're interested in writing us an
Excuse
email,
me.
You can write us an email at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. However, social media, we are modern folks. Social media is probably
the
best way to get to interacting with us.
Are you saying we are modern folks, or we are modern, folks?
Both.
That's impossible.
Do you say folks, or do you say folks?
So social media.
Clothes or clothes.
You can find us at It's Got Star Trek on Twitter, at It's Got Star Trek on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on YouTube.
YouTube.
That's not how it's said.
Yes, YouTube.
YouTube.
It's with all the kids in the...
Facebook.
We put the podcast up there. We don't have any videos. If we put a videos, we'd have to do the whole like, hey, guys. Hey, guys. It's got Star Trek. Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
It's my show.
We're gonna unbox this episode. Hey, guys.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. No, but seriously, though, you can like and subscribe.
And give us reviews on Apple iPods and other things.
Apple iTunes. Oh, yeah. Apple Podcasts.
Apple
Podcasts.
Apple Bop.
You can get us all these
those
places.
Reviews help.
But if you can get us a review, that's always great. Apple Podcasts, iTunes.
We're doing the same thing that they do. We're doing the like and subscribe.
Yeah, but we're doing it in a more chill, clever way.
Much more witty.
Sort of psychologically surreptitious.
Okay.
The audience isn't going to figure out.
Syrup delicious.
That we're asking for the same thing that the obnoxious podcasters ask for, but we're doing it in a cool way.
Yeah, we're cool.
We're like, we don't care. We don't give a fuck if you give us a review.
Don't
or
do it. I don't give a
you
fuck.
You don't have to give us a review on Apple Podcasts.
I don't want you to.
Don't even listen to
Or on
to
Google
us.
Podcasts. Or on, I don't know, Spotify.
We
Does anybody use Spotify
audience.
Anymore? I think people stop using
Spotify.
Just
kidding. We love our audience.
Yeah, but anyway, I think we conveyed the important information. Next week, Discovery. Other episodes are available. And until then, good night. Yes. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. Is that good?
That's great.
Good?
To
sure.
To the nth degree it was.
Live long and prosper.
There we go. That's a couple of good ones. All right.
We got a few. One of them will hit. One of them will hit.
All right. Bye-bye.
Captain, we have lost computer control.
What?